Live the music. Clare FM's West Wind.
And you're very welcome back to the second hour of the West Wind. I'm Owen O'Neill. I've been with you for an hour. I'm going to be with you for another hour. And the good news and the great news is Frankie Gavin is in the house. He's not only in the house, he's sitting across me. Welcome to Clare FM, Frankie.
Thank you, Owen. Great to be here.
You came down from Galway.
I did in the mist and the rain, yeah, it was well, though.
Ouchterard, is that your base?
Ouchterard is my base, yeah.
Nice
yeah.
Town.
But the new motorway makes such a difference, no matter where you're going, south anyway.
Yeah,
I remember going to Waterford there recently. I did it in 3 hours, which is extraordinary, because I remember doing it in the past, was closer to 5 hours. I'm a slow driver anyway, but God, the new motorway is such a gift, you know, and it's so much safer.
So that's the reason you've been down to Clare so often.
That's right, Jay, yeah.
You were here last weekend.
I was here last weekend at the Trad Festival.
You had a terrible time, I'd say, did you? It was awful boring up there.
Oh, it was cool.
Frankie, I heard great reports.
I had a ball on because, of course, I met lots of people that I didn't expect to meet, from Birmingham and Manchester and all over the country here. But, of course, it was a special occasion because thanks to Derek Hickey and Mary Bergen, indeed, Alec and myself and Derek and Brian McGrath had a gig at the Tradfest in the lovely Old Ground Hotel, and we just had a ball of a night. We got what I can only describe as kind of a hero's welcome there. It was brilliant. I mean, people playing, pick old tunes that we used to do in the past, like from earlier albums, really, first album, second album, this kind of stuff. And the minute you start them, people would rise to the occasion and they lit up, you know.
I understand that.
That was really special, you know.
I think people were very happy to see you play with Alec Finn again.
Yeah, me too. I mean,
of course,
It's been a great reunion, and, you know, we're going to continue that, and that's, you know, thank God for it.
Tomorrow night you're in Corfin.
We're in Corfin, the Chalk Yole tomorrow night, and we're kind of going to try and do a bit of a repeat broadcast as what we did down here in Ennis at the Tradfest. And, well, it's just lovely to be playing good old decent tunes, and it just brings all sorts of fantastic memories back as well. You know what I mean? We've been going, God almighty, well, Alec and I have been going since, well, he and I started playing music together when I was about 16 or thereabouts. You know, I was still in fifth year.
How did you meet him?
In secondary school. Met him in Spittle. There was sessions every Sunday morning in Hughes's pub in Spittle. And himself, Charlie Piggott used to go out. He was in the biology department or microbiology or something like that, it department at UCG. He used to go out every Sunday morning as well. Johnny Ringo McDonough used to go out and put the bower on and a tweed suit, from what I remember. honest to God, yeah, he was very dapper. But so we'd go out there, and I used to, thanks to John Lewis, a great flute player, an Englishman, married to Breda Lewis from County Wexford, father and mother of Patsy and Liam, of course, you know. So John used to collect me on his left-hand drive Volkswagen bus, you know, one of the old Volkswagen. It was a beautiful car, that he brought in from, I suppose, somewhere in France, or wherever. But he'd pick me up on a Sunday morning, we'd go out to his house, and I'd do a bit of fiddle work with Liam for about an hour. Then we'd have a bit to eat, and then we'd go off over to Spittle and have the Hughes's.
This is 1971 or 72, kind of thing.
Thereabouts. It was an extraordinary time, because then, like, Alec and Charlie and Johnny and McDonough and myself, we kind of accidentally kind of do a few tunes together. You know, there was kind of a something special happening between the four of us. You know, and I think it was Phil Callery, unless I'm greatly mistaken. He was running a club in Dublin called the Neptune Roan Club. In 1907. But anyway, he said, would you consider coming up and doing a gig, you know, an actual performance together? And we did. And after that gig, somebody said, wouldn't it be nice if we had somebody to sing a couple of songs here and there? And I thought to myself, by God, I know exactly who will fit that bill. And, you know, my childhood friend and Dolores Kane came to mind immediately.
You had the best group of all time.
It was remarkable because
straight away.
Mm. It was just magical, and of course, well, Dolores is magical anyway, and always has and always will be. But to have a hit with a song called "The Ramblin' Irishman," it was really quite remarkable. But it was the sound, it was Dolores' voice as well, and just the simplicity of what we were doing had its own kind of simple, innocent kind of magic at the time.
There was something about Charlie's banjo playing too, was it kind of
it hadn't been heard before, and it hasn't really been heard since, in the sense it was halfway between what the modern sound of banjo is and the older sound of the, yeah, I think, or something like that.
Charlie always had that lovely, great taste of just plain, lovely, tasty, simple banjo playing. Now, banjo playing has gone to extraordinary extremes at this stage of the game, you know what I mean?
It's hard to beat The Cottage in the Glen, that set. It's probably one of the greatest banjo pieces, a great piece of music, actually, of all time. Do you know, and yet there's no reason why it should be, except that it's charming and powerful any effort.
Yeah, and I suppose,
and when you come in the fiddly, like, you know, he starts off in the banjo, doesn't he?
That one, yeah. And then people ask for that, and then, of course, it's hard to read. I mean, I'm requested to do that here and there in different gigs I'm doing here and there, but it's you need Charlie on the banjo, you know. Mm-hmm. But sadly, Charlie can't play the banjo anymore, but he's a beautiful melodeon player, and which he played on the very first album as well. You know, he played an air and a couple of jigs and stuff. But I came across a recording there recently, well, not recently, but, you know, some time back, a cassette, an old cassette. And it was a recording that we did in out in Radio and Gretel's, I think it was for Sean Vaughan, as far as I know. But my God, you know, I must, you know, convert that into a CD and so people can hear it and, you know, we can play it, you know what I mean?
A few years later, I'd seen Dé Danann at the Lizard of Erna Festival. I remember Johnny Ringo's Beuron solo. Yeah. You know, it was one of those moments. The first time I saw you up close was in Finbar Boyle's club in Slattery's in Cambridge. We were playing with a fella called Jackie Daly, just the two of you, in E-flat, I think, in a red pedal soprani. Would that be about 1981 or 82, I think?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, that was a remarkable combination.
It was, but the thing is, like, Jackie, of course, and Seamus Cray, you know, were working together for many, many years. And we did tours of Germany with Clannad, Jackie Daly and James Cray, Thrasnia Vuelon from Inishmore, and Michael, the great Michael Russell. And those were great days as well. And like, we listening to Jackie's playing on those tours and everything like that, and invariably, you know, we'd have a couple of sessions here and there, of course, either on the side of the Autobahn or in a, you know, a Greek restaurant after having our dinner or whatever. And myself and Ali thought, God, it'd be great to have Jackie in the band, but we didn't want to split, you know, disjoint what he was doing with Seamus Cray either, so we were mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think Jackie was doing a gig down in the Clare Folk Club, which was whatchamacallit's in Croisín.
Joe Galligan.
So we went down to hear Jackie, and we, you know, he was doing a solo gig there, I believe, yeah, and we asked him would he consider joining us, and he said yes. And we did the first album then together, which was called The Mistcover Mountain, yeah. I think. And there's some nice stuff in that, I think.
Absolutely incredible. So I think it's from start to finish. Well, I mean, I'm a Dé Danann man anyway, but from start to finish.
Fresh and airy, like, you know?
It still is. So I'd like to ask you, I hope you don't mind now, we're living in the past, a lot in the past, but all this time there was a remarkable scene going on in Galway, and it was a wild scene, and it was full of music, and it was full of characters. Were you involved in that in a big way, or did you... Were you on the road a lot of the time, like with Mickey Finn and Gerry Carty and all these great characters that were providing, you know, an amazing entertainment to a certain extent for all people passing through?
Absolutely. Well, I suppose I should say that the first gigs that I was doing were in O'Reilly's pub in Foster Street, playing the piano with Eddie Maloney and Vincent Keegan, and that was quite an experience in itself. I was just accompanying them. I was 13 at the time, and I was playing two or three, maybe four nights a week. If it was a good night, you get fiver, and if it was a bad night, you get £3.
It's all right.
And it was all okay.
That's all right.
If you were 13, that's serious.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But there were great times, you know what I mean? And yes, of course, Mickey Finn was one of this extraordinary, hippie-like, flamboyant, wild fiddle players, you know what I mean? Mm. He never claimed to be a traditional fiddle player, but he had his own interpretive style, and he was charming to be in the company of. He was a lovely man, very decent, and he used to always ask me, like, have you any old spare strings, you know, strings that I would have used already and just kept them as spares for myself, and I give him a huge clutch of those, you know what I mean? But it was like, he was a very humble man as well, you know. Great time, Gerry Carty. Of course, Gerry Carty now lives out in New Mexico.
I met him there last year.
Mm-hmm. And hale and hearty he is, and he looks great, sounds great, singing great, and playing great, and everything.
Gerry survived.
survived.
It's a sad, it's a sad memories and it's happy memories at the same time. But so many people didn't survive those. It was a wildness. It was a wildness. Like
it was, And the wildness got the better of several.
Of course it did. And in Clare too.
But would
you have spent hours playing in those days in the city, or would you been outside that situation?
Oh yeah, I used to take afternoons off from school. But the thing is, I couldn't carry the fiddle because that'd be. But I had the tin whistle in my school bag. I was going to say in my handbag, but I only had the tin whistle in my school bag. So I'd drop off into the cellar bar where Alec and Terry Smith and Mickey Finn would be, you know, hanging out and playing a couple of tunes or whatever. And I was always pushing Alec to, you know, start a band and all this kind of stuff. And he had absolutely no interest whatsoever. No, this is fine. Like, you know, I got the regular gigs, you know, he was doing. I think the band was called Dickler Fitz.
It was, yeah.
Isn't that right?
I mean, I had that CD, it was actually,
But I remember there were extraordinary times. And, you know, the occasional afternoon that I did take off from school and go in and play a few tunes, it was just brilliant. Like, you know what I mean? It was just an excuse to be amongst musicians who had a certain sound, the sound of Alex Bazooki, I suppose, really.
You were born the right place.
Just shaped, of course, the whole sound of Détan.
Well, before we go from Mickey Finn onto Django Reinhardt or Stephen Grappelli, would you play a tune?
I mean,
we have a long way to go. We're only in 1971, Frankie.
This is a tune that I learned from the great Eddie Meloni, and as I keep talking about Eddie recently and Wall as well, he was a huge influence on me. He used to come to a small little pub in Corndulla, and when we were children, and I was very small at the time when Eddie brought me up to, with the permission of my parents, up to the community centre or town hall or whatever you want to call it in Corndulla, where they were going to be playing the Cayley later on, and he brought me up and put me standing up on a chair playing the whistle, and he stood beside me playing the flute. And so Eddie Meloni really introduced me to performing on a stage of any description, you know, at a very early age. I think I was about 5 at the time. But this is a tune that I heard on his double CD that his son Sean brought out fairly recently, and I can't remember the name of it. I should have played it on the whistle, which Eddie did. Or actually, on that recording, he actually played it on the flute. He played 3 lovely reels together, and that was one of them. And I think there was... somebody was doing some step dancing to that particular track. Was it Sean Bourne? I think it might have been Sean Bourne O'Brien, is that what was that his name?
Paddy Bourne O'Brien.
Paddy Bourne O'Brien, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right, it would be safe to play that.
Yeah. But anyway, great album, great double album.
I'm talking to Frankie Gavin, and I know there's so many texts coming in, and the people texting 086-1800-96. Well, probably too many to mention, because I really don't want to get stuck into reading the text, because there's so much. We're only 1971, and we've got a long way to go. I'm going to take an ad break. It's just a pleasure, a total, but for me particularly, because I'm sitting here in a lovely, quiet, darkish kind of studio, listening to the amazing fiddle player and the amazing history of Irish music, from a man that obviously just loves the music more than anything else. Yeah. We're chatting here in the break, so we nearly forgot about the thousands of you out there. We're back in air, and I'm delighted to have Frankie Gavin in the studio. And we're going all right, Frankie? Are you all right?
Great. I'm having a great time here.
I want to talk to you about singers, because you've introduced, you single-handedly introduced the greatest singers in Ireland through the years with Détan, and you've brought so many singers to our attention and given them all a break and given them all a platform. Maura O'Connell is sitting over in Nashville, and, you know, she might be still in Ennis here. You know, if you hadn't just said, how are you? If you just hadn't said, how are you?
I begin to feel guilty.
No, it actually sounds cool. It is. Yeah, anyway, you know what I mean.
I do.
You love the song.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, I suppose after the first idea of we looking and the thoughts of a singer being required for the band, I mean, the band, like, when I say the band, I mean, we weren't even really a band. We just went up to Dublin and did a gig, the four of us. And the next thing was we kind of needed a singer type of thing. And then we went up and down to Carlistran and met Dolores, who was a family friend, and the whole Cain family and my family were very close friends for years. And I suppose there was one of the warmest connections of all time ever made between myself and Dolores. I mean, we're still great pals. She was out of my house recently, and we were doing a thing for a television thing, like, together, and Alec was out there and Martin O'Connor was out and everything, so that was beautiful. But, like, you know, over the years, I mean, I suppose it's a matter of what kind of taste you have in what singers are out there and whether you know that one singer will be, you know, really suitable or not. But there were a fairly decent number of choices out there. And, of course, Dolores was first. And then Mary Blackett.
Where was Johnny Moynihan? Was Johnny Moynihan before Mary?
Was
he before Dolores?
He was, no.
No.
He came after Dolores. Yeah. Because Dolores decided to go off to London with her future husband, John Faulkner. Yeah. And they were working with BBC and all this kind of stuff. And she left. And I remember when she left Ireland, not alone just left the band, but when she left Ireland, my heart sunk. I thought, this is the worst news ever. And it was. It was awful, because the thing about music and the thing about songs and traditional music in particular, it's an emotional attachment that you have with other people that you're playing with. And people kind of forget that. And, like, when you're emotionally connected with somebody and other musicians or singers or whatever the case may be, you're connected on that level, which is not just a methodical, it's not a mechanical thing. It's just a different experience altogether. And if anything, if, God forbid, any words would pass between people that would be upsetting or anything like that, you're more hurt than if it was just an office job, without, you know, making any demeaning remarks about people who work in offices. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is that just the whole music thing and the connection with Irish music and song is an emotional attachment. And when that gets anyway shuffled or damaged in any way, it's deeper, it hurts deeper. So when Dolores left, it was awful. It was really awful. I thought, like, well, that's the end of that now. And then we had to do a television show out in the Embankment.
What age are you this at this stage, Frankie? 23, 24?
Oh, God, no.
More?
No.
No?
I was about, I don't know, 17 or 18 or something.
You were that young when Dolores was seen with the diamond? Yeah.
Oh, I was, yeah. I'm still that young.
But that's amazing. So, yeah. This is all going on in your life.
I'll tell you what, I would park the bike and tie it up against the railings at St. Joseph's School in Galway and get a lift from the lads to go up to Dublin and do a gig with them in, say, Slattery's or the Neptune Road Club, and get the homework done on the way up, sleep on the way down, and get the bus into school the following day. And that, I was like six, I was in fifth year, so that's like about 16 or something, you know. So that's how early that whole thing started for me. But anyway, so back to the singers and stuff like that. I mean, so Johnny Moynihan stepped into the breach because we had no singer, because Dolores was after leaving, and then we had this program from the Embankment. It's you know, it's so long ago, I think it's in black and white. Is it?
No, but it's a long time ago, though.
It feels like it's in black and white. But and Johnny was with us for a couple of years as well, and that was great. And he was great, quite a character. But we went through a list of extraordinary singers. We had Mary Black, Maura O'Connell. I remember, like, I think it was at a hotel out in Six Mile Bridge. I can't remember the name of the hotel, but Tom and his wife, Maura, I think, were their names. Anyway, so I could hear this voice in the back room, and I thought, who in the name of God is that? So I asked them, is it okay if we go in? And, you know, she was playing for a kind of a going away party or something, or a kind of American wake for some people that were moving to America. So I went in and I heard her singing. I think Mikey Hanrahan was with her, as far as I remember. And I think the two of them had a duo called Tumbleweed.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Was that it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, I went in and I heard her singing. I thought, sweet mother of God, like, she has an extraordinary voice, but I don't think she'll sing anything like what I'd like her to sing, you know, that kind of way. And when it came to the time, she didn't want to sing those songs either, you know what I mean? The nearest thing to any kind of a traditional or folky song that she would sing was Maggie, you know? And so on. But eventually, we were coming down from Seattle, I think it was, a Portland, Oregon, heading, driving on a long drive down to San Francisco. And I had all this material and all this old stuff from the roaring 20s with the Flanagan Brothers and everything, and My Irish Molly was part of it. And Morris says, oh, no, I'm not going to sing that.
She's in the band at this stage now.
Oh, she was. Oh, sorry.
Did you just ask her on the night to join the band?
Well, actually, we were going to America like about 10 days later. And we were going to be playing at the...
So you never met Maura O'Connell before?
No, I never met her.
So you walked into a back room. What happens next?
I asked her, would she come to America in 10 days' time?
That's brilliant.
Honest to God.
That's brilliant. And she said yes.
And she says yes.
I have to ask
your
mother.
What she was getting into. I'll ask my mother and my father down in the fish shop and see what they say. And like, and we went to America. And the first gig we did with her and ourselves was in very posh Lincoln Center, Alice Tully Hall, which was like massive place, you know, beautiful. And it still is, of course. So we went in at the deep end, really, and it was a massive success. And, of course, people just were charmed by her great voice. And so, I mean, she was kind of rounding up bits and pieces of songs that she was going to. She wasn't singing Molly at that stage of the game, you know. But as time passed, I kind of convinced her into doing this kind of vaudeville material album, which we did, you know, the Star Spangled Molly, which was probably the greatest seller of all time, certainly for us. I don't know what happened to other bands in Ireland, but that was massive. I mean, we'd have to do My Irish Molly certainly twice in Ireland every night, and sometimes three times. I mean, the encore would be like, oh, come on, we're ordering for more. And everyone still knows it. Young and old, children know it.
And they know the music behind it too.
And they do.
I think so.
It's stuck so well. And like, actually, I'm working on a project which is going to feature the music of the Flanagan Brothers. And it's going to be at the Temple Bar Trout Fest on the 27th of January. And with Martin Murray, great banjo player from Waterford, you know, and the Flanagan Brothers connection with Waterford. And Emma Corbett, phenomenal melodeon player. She's only 18, but she's just a stunning player. So we're actually putting a tribute album together to the Flanagan Brothers, because the Flanagan family and I have been very close ever since the Molly days.
So the jump from the 70s to today, it strikes me, and I mightn't be sure what I'm saying, because we wouldn't know each other that well, but you're playing a lot now. You're playing. I see that you're playing a lot. You're playing with Derek. You're playing with Noel. You were up at Kenny's with Noel Hill last couple of weeks ago. I was there for about a half an hour before I was able to, had to go down to my own gig.
Yeah.
There was a fierce joy in your playing, like a real joy in your playing. It strikes me as you've a man that's done so much that you're really just sitting back now, and whoever asks you to play, you'll go down and you'll have a great night. Is there any truth in that supposition? That, I mean, I'm not saying your ambition has gone. I'm sure you're very ambitious, but you know, you've got loads of projects in your head. But am I right in saying that you're never enjoyed playing, or you've never been more relaxed in your playing? Is there any truth?
No, I mean, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, I've never enjoyed playing as much before as I am now, or as I do now. I'm not really quite sure why that is. Maybe it's just that
I can feel it. Maybe in later years, you
have more respect for music. You have more respect for what you might have kind of achieved. Maybe, you know, it's kind of actually only kicking in now. You know, when I was much younger, in the earlier days of the success of the band and everything like that, I suppose I didn't really realize it. You know, we were sort of doing very, very well.
And you're going on to the next thing.
Yeah, onto the next. Thing.
And that's what you had to do.
And I've got great new projects, as one of which I just mentioned. You know. But it's every day now is a new, I won't say a challenge, it's a new joy, it's a new, I'm hearing tunes from different musicians, old recordings, new recordings, and I think, oh, that's a lovely tune there, if I put that one with this one, and all that kind of stuff. So it's just as exciting now, perhaps more exciting, as I say, than it ever was.
Isn't that great?
It is great, isn't it?
Because to live in the past is an awful. I mean, you'd see that in people of your era, that, you know, that the dwelling in the past is actually taken from what's going on at the moment in a creative way.
Yeah, well, it'll drain you.
Yeah,
and any sense of negativity from the past or whatever, it will drain you, as I say, and that's not going to do you any good. You're not going to enjoy your life and your music. And there's something about traditional Irish music that I know that Joe Cooley once said. brings people to their senses, I think. Well, I don't know about that now. I think he was right in one way, but it actually drives people nice and daft, you know. And it makes people, you can see the joy in people's eyes when they walk into
session. But yourself and Noel Hill playing the other night, like, there's just total joy. You're driving Noel on. Noel is excited as hell. He's full of passion and full of, and it's funny. You're having a great fun on stage. And like, you're playing the Books of Aaron Moore. You're playing the Congress. I don't know what you're playing. You're playing tunes we all love.
Yeah.
And it's like we never heard them before. Because like, or else we've discovered a new way of listening to them. But I just think there's something good going on.
Yeah. Well, I'm always constantly sort of slightly, if you'll pardon the expression, musically blackguarding Noel in the sense that I'm kind of driving him on a small. But you know what I mean? And like he'd be going, oh God Almighty, you know. And he would be playing it nice and slow and steady and all this kind of stuff, which is all fine, like, you know what I mean? Noel has a great time when he, you know, speeds up a small bit and pumps a bit more excitement into it. And, like, that's what Irish music is all about, you know what I mean? There's excitement in it. It's lively. It's dance music. It's called the dance music of Ireland, you know, and for a very good reason.
Frankly, I have to take a break. This is just great.
This is Clare FM.
Darren Hayes here from DH Westlink Limited, Tuam Road, Galway, home of the largest range of new and quality used cars in the West, and proud sponsors of the West Wind and Clare FM, westlink.ie.
We're in a lovely studio here in Francis Street in Ennis, County Clare, and we're broadcasting to the world, and the way I know that is because there's messages coming in from all over the world. Forgive me if I don't read them all out, because I think time is scarce, and I'd say hello to Frankie from everybody afterwards, but thanks for all the messages. But I want to get stuck in here. This is a good track. We're playing, you're playing tomorrow night in Chocion, Corrifin. I'm going to play a piece of music that features, I think, three, yourself, Derek, and Alec are on this piece of music. It's The Girl That Broke My Heart.
The Girl That Broke My Heart.
Derek's on this, isn't he?
Yeah, Derek is on this, and it's a nice looking track. And Brian McGrath is going to join us tomorrow night as well as a special guest again.
Some of the type of music you're going to hear tomorrow. Are you looking forward to Corrifin? It's a beautiful little venue, isn't it?
I am, Owen, yeah. I mean, I've done stuff there before for Patrick O'Reilly, and he organises things brilliantly anyway.
He does, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that, and it's great to be back working with Alec again, as I said, like, and Derek. And
so you had a load of companies between the time you last played with Alec and, let's say, the you played.
Yeah.
So was it like getting back a glove coming back on, you know, that Alec is so unique. In a sense, he's completely unique, you know.
Yes,
he is. Like, and there's no comparison.
And he's the original of that Greek bouzouki style, you know. And, you know, it just reminded me of, you know, the album we did together in New York, you know, starting around 3:30 in the afternoon in Manhattan and kept going until 7 or 8 o'clock, made the whole album done. You know, just, you know, as you say, a hand in a glove, or there's a comfort zone there.
Yeah.
It's that sound, it reminds you of lots of things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's great memories, you know. And so it's nice to be out out doing a few gigs together again all these years.
Yeah, and people are delighted. You know,
it's been too long, so I'm delighted, people are delighted as
Good. Yeah. I think people would love to hear you play another tune, Frankie. I'd love to talk. I'm mad into hearing all about this, all the times you've had with the Rolling Stones and Yehudi Menuhin and Stephen Grappelli and everything. I'd love to hear all about that. But play a tune first and we'll see if we can get, if you don't mind. I want to interrogate you.
Not at all. This is Rogue
Can I put you on a spot? It's the anniversary of Dibno Sullivan, one of the loveliest concertina players, and there's a lot of tips. Would you play a slow piece just for a minute or two in memory of Dibno Sullivan?
Okay.
Would you mind?
I'd love to.
Her family and her friends would really appreciate it.
It's called Goldsmith's Lament, the Lament for Oliver Goldsmith, composed by the great Seamus Shannon.
For a lovely Dibno. Thank you, Frankie Gavin, playing a piece of music from memory of our great friend Dibno Sullivan, who we missed terribly, and it's our anniversary today. So for all our family and friends, I don't think you could ever get a nicer tribute than that. That was beautiful, Frankie.
Thank you.
It means a lot.
Thank you very much.
Music is powerful. I did this Sunday morning show, and another concertina friend of mine, Kitty Hayes, was an old lady, and every time I played yourself and Stephen Grappelli playing Danny Boy, she rang me. Without fail, every time. She loved it. She loved it. She was a concert player, she played Jeeves and Ray, she was great. But what was it like meeting people like that? And was it different than, like, would somebody have been famous make any difference, or was it just the music that grabbed you?
Well, first of all, I absolutely knew nothing about Stephen Grappelli and Django Reinhardt, only that Alec Finn had actually introduced me to his music way back in his Gate Lodge out in Spittle, in I was going to say 1974. And when I saw that he was playing a concert in Dublin, I asked our ex-manager, Morris Cassidy, if I could meet him. And I did, and he organised it, and we met, and we became very close friends and dear friends and started playing some music together. But he was one of the most extraordinary people that I've ever met, in the sense that he was very gentle, very gentle person, very soft-spoken. He had very, his hands were so soft, and he had a very, very gentle sort of handshake. And so one thing that really struck me about him was, and how he said, you must respect your music and you must respect your instrument. So when he saw rosin or resin on the fiddle, he was really quite disgusted with me, and I felt terrible about it. And I haven't learned much since, because there's still plenty of rosin on the fiddle. But
it's a kind of a, it's a, we could talk for, that's a very, an ongoing discussion, isn't it? Like, yeah. People get really offended by, Irish players with their rosin. See, we kind of love it, don't we?
Well, we do, but the thing is, like, that little did Stefan know that Irish musicians, fiddle players in particular, we always knew. Is to leave the rosin on the body of the fiddle, because it softened it. It did actually make it sweeter,
right?
You know, because it actually muted. It took the edge off the fiddle itself. You know, mm-hmm. So in one sense, the older generation here and the old folks here, they were right. But at the end of the day, what it does is it kind of eats into the instrument, and you have to really keep it clean for the instrument.
Is that a good fiddle?
This is a fairly, yeah, it's a fine fiddle. Yeah, I've had it for many, many years. And Mihalo Holon bought this fiddle for me when I had no money at all, and we went into McNeil's.
When you were four, before, yeah, you started gigging.
I might have been six. But I mean,
he all over the islands.
Yeah, but he generously bought the fiddle for me, and he said, you can pay me back whenever you have the money, and I did. But I've had the same fiddle ever since, and it's got this very distinctive sound on it. And,
yeah.
But I mean, it has another distinctive sound about it as well. That's because it's tuned up to E flat. I always play 99% of the time in E-flat, because I think the first person I heard playing in E-flat was Tommy Peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard Sean Kane playing in E-flat as well, and I thought, that's the key for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been stuck there ever since, you know.
But, and you've been always associated with box players. The box is the instrument that gives you the freedom you want.
It does, and I love playing with
Barry. And there's so many of them.
Yeah, I mean, Barry Brady is a phenomenal player from Roscommon, and Jackie and Martin, and good Lord, Aidan Coffey. Of course, Aidan, you
had a great quartet at one stage, I have to say. I loved it with
Borner,
yeah, and Steve, Steve Cooney, and Carl Heshin.
Yeah.
That was immense.
That was great fun. That was a gig we did with Stefan and Gore. We called it Jigs and Jazz. We kind of advertised it as that, you know. It was a great night. It was a phenomenal night. Something very special happened that night. You know, of course, I'm going to be doing some more gigs with Dermot in the not too distant future, and Paddy Keenan too, but with Carol Heshin also. But, you know, Stefan has gone. The last time I saw Stefan, I was sitting in the end of his bed. He was laid out in his house in Paris, and his family and minder said, you'll probably want to spend some time with Stefan. And I sat at the end of his bed, and I looked around his room, and laid out there, and all the accolades and all his fiddles, and it was just a moment that I'll never forget.
Music's been good to you, but you've been good back. You've left a, you know, there's a legacy there, and Donnan particularly, you know, the things you've talked about, the first albums in particular. Is this, would you feel that those first couple of albums are like they need to be brought out again, and they need to be,
they do, you know. In my attic I have the vinyl of the first Dead Annan album, with the drawing of the cottage on it, the gate lodge on the front of it, and I have the Mist Covered Mountain.
They're the two, like, that people need to hear a lot. And also I must say I loved the, you know, with Sean O'Connor and the Shannon singers.
Yeah, and Tom Fogey.
Yeah, Tom Fogey.
People were completely cracked when we did that.
But time takes care of a lot of those things. People often think that innovators are cracked.
Yeah.
And then time makes you realise, wow, this is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, Shannon singers, I mean, with all due respect to Shannon singers, they weren't getting quite, you know, I mean, the look in, like, that we were getting, you know, with the music and everything, because, like, playing Jigs and Reels and so on, and we had more airplay, you know, for a start off, when we thought the right thing, the respectful thing to do, because we knew Sean O'Connor and Tom Fogey and Tom Spittle and everything, and we respected them as great singers and great people, and we just felt that what we're doing comes from there as well. You know what I mean? There's no reason why they shouldn't be getting a real decent look in. So we put two of them on the Miscovered Mountain album. You know what I mean? And as I say, a lot of people, particularly from you know Manhattan side of the world, thought we were completely shuffled. You know?
Yeah, yes.
But
yes.
I thought it was the right thing to do. It was the respectful thing to do, and I'm glad we did it. And
I'm glad you did it. I'm glad you did. I can't believe what time it is. I have to go. I made one terrible mistake. I should have had you in at 7 o'clock, because it's been so easy and such a pleasure to talk to you. And I don't think we've even started. Like, we haven't even started.
Should we catch up again sometime?
Yeah, well, you'll be more than welcome down. I think we should catch up here again, because I think people like the. I know I did. And it's time to go. We've about 2 minutes. Tomorrow night you're in Corrifin, 8 o'clock start.
Yes, I believe it is. Yeah.
€70 in.
No, it's much less. It's far more reasonable.
There you are. Now you all think you're getting a bargain. Anyway.
People can put in a contribution of €70 if they wish, and just hand it to me.
For those that haven't been in Corrifin, Pádraig O'Reilly has a great scene going out there. And it's also, and Damien, it's just one of the most incredible venues. It seats about 120, but you feel you're playing to about 14 or 15 people. It's just really tight and intimate, and you're going to have a great night out there, Frank.
It's a warm spot.
The first time.
And I've been in Corrifin for many, many years, and Tony and Anne's house and his mother's house and everything. I've had a great time in Bofi Quinn's over the years as well. So looking forward to it.
I think you like County Clare.
I do. I could live there.
Well,
I could live here quite easily.
Well, why don't you make another record and buy a holiday home?
I'll just buy a house.
Move down again. Ennis is hopping, you know that, don't you? Ennis is like, it's never been like this before. Half of North America has arrived in, all musicians, and they're living here.
Well, Tribfest last weekend was just amazing.
Yeah.
It's great. Amazing. It's lovely, yeah.
Well, have you a minute and a half? Will you go out for a tune? I've got to go to an ad break in the middle of your tune. I'm going to have to cut you off. But listen, thanks very much, Frankie Gavin.
Jig, wheel, or hornpipe? What do you fancy?
A jig.
Okay.
Oh, no, you played the jig last.
All right. What about the Garden of Daisies?
That'll do.
I did this tune with Carnation a good few years ago.
I'll be cutting you off in the middle of it, Frankie. Thanks very much for coming.
A pleasure. Thank you.